All righty, here we go. Here comes, oh, wow, right on cue. Look at the wooden wagon, the horses coming in. You got them all dressed up. Look at that. Teeny tiny lady in there and waving to the crowd. Crowd forming now, just being held back by security. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. Let's, Tom, get the microphone close enough. If you move it in there a little bit, we can see who's holding on to the tablet, holding on to the teeny tiny.
I'm begging you, do not eat the letter of the day.
Zap him.
Go, 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 go.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
Stop, stop, stop.
Holy criminy.
Calm down. Oh,
that is really, oh, man.
Dory and the teeny tiny in the same room. About that. You knew that was coming around a second time, didn't you? Huh? Yeah. All right. Hey.
Wow. We
got it all. We just is. Potpourri of noise and news and entertainment. Trying to make up for that Rachel Bell show we just did a little while ago. Whoa, poor Rachel. She's probably drinking away her problems right now. Hey, Hannah Scott, I lost $5 today because I thought for sure vaccinated individuals that follow the science know they can't transmit the virus and there's no need to wear a mask. Tom said he will wear a mask, and Governor wore a mask. And were you able to make out anything he said?
I was able to make some things out that he said, and I even have, an answer to what you're talking about, because you had asked me last time about if we have to wear the mask, why do we need to get vaccinated and all of this. So I have some of that, but you'll have to wait, because I'm starting with something different. Tell me when you're ready.
Fire away.
Okay. So the governor called this press conference today, and he says about 5 million people in the state are already eligible for the vaccine.
A little more than 1 million Washingtonians over the age of 16, of course, will still be waiting for their eligibility. And today I'm very pleased to tell you that their wait will be shortened. Starting April 15th, 2 weeks from today, and just 4 months since we started our vaccination program, all Washingtonians over 16 will be eligible. So beginning on April 15th, all remaining Washingtonians over the age of 16 will be eligible. We have 4 out of 5 million eligible today. It'll be great to finish that remaining 1 million folks in our state.
So why move the timeline up?
Mm-hmm. We are confident we can take this step because of our dosage allocations have increased. We've now had roughly 3.3 million doses that have been administered in our state. And more than 1 million Washingtonians are already fully vaccinated. So that's great news. Basically, what we have to say is our efforts are working in the state of Washington. They've been working because we have made decisions based on science. They've been working because we have made priority decisions that have respected people's lives. And our fundamental goal, which is to save lives in the state of Washington. And we are saving lives in the state of Washington big time.
Both he and the Secretary of the Department of Health said that they estimate, there was a chart and everything, that they have been able to save between 7 and 15,000 lives compared to what some other states who didn't act as quickly as our governor did. But he said there's another reason that he's moving up the timeline.
We are seeing a disturbing uptick of cases in the state of Washington. And we know this for a certainty. If we want to avoid a rollback of some of the progress we've made in our business reopening and the like, we need to do everything we can to keep these numbers down now. Obviously, the vaccine is a critical part of this because the new evidence is that it is very encouraging that it can keep not only lives being saved, but to reduce the transmission of this virus. But it's also important that we do our part in addition to the vaccine. Social distancing, basic hygiene, avoiding unnecessary indoor gatherings, particularly when we're not masked, and wearing this mask anytime we can to continue to keep these transmission rates down.
So, sounding the alarm bell, that's been going on the last few days for sure. And I know that there's worse outbreaks going on in other parts of the country. Now, another concern, and he hit this one really hard, is that 28% of people over 65 eligible but opting not to get the vaccine.
Basically, we have tens of thousands of people, those over 65, who have not had the vaccine, who are really living in the danger zone right now. It is a dangerous situation not to be vaccinated, particularly if you're over 65 today. And we want to do all we can to protect these folks who are today in the danger zone. I'm really hopeful that everyone can have a discussion with the people they love who are of a certain age and urge them to get this vaccine, to get them to help save their lives. I just can't stand the thought that in the next 2 months we'll be losing folks that we could save with a simple vaccination.
So pretty much a call to everybody to talk to their people who are 65 and over who are choosing not to get the vaccine, encourage them to get vaccinated, but we still have to wear the masks and the social distancing and all of that. So as you had asked me, I think last week, John, I asked the governor, why then get vaccinated if we have to still maintain all of these safety protocols? And the governor says there are several reasons to get the vaccine.
One, if you don't care about anybody in life, if you don't care about your parents and you don't care about your grandparents and you don't care about your neighbors and the only thing in life is your own skin, there's still a reason to get this vaccine. It can save your life. We still have young people who have lost their lives because of this vaccine. We still have young people who have the long haul syndrome that have had quite profound long-term consequences at early ages of, you know, exhaustion and some mental difficulties and not having a sense of taste and the like. So there is a reason, just like you get medicine for anything else, for young people to or anybody to get this vaccine, even if you don't care about anybody else. But I would hope that people would feel some degree of kinship and affection for the rest of humanity.
And he says the bottom line here is,
if there's anybody you love in your life, get the vaccine for them. A girlfriend, boyfriend, neighbor, relative. If there's anybody you love, please get the vaccine because it's an expression of love for them so you don't infect them. So I think these are pretty powerful reasons to get the vaccine. Now, as far as the mask and everything else, these are just common sense things. We've been doing it. It works. We just need to keep doing it for a certain period of time. We know they still work. And there are places where that has not happened. We have some college campuses right now where we have great outbreaks because we've had irresponsible behavior, and that's endangering the whole community. And so we need to ask for more responsibility for some of our college students as well.
And there you go.
Why is he wearing a mask?
Setting a good example.
He has a vaccine, and the CDC, he follows science. The CDC says he can't transmit it. So why is he wearing a mask?
I don't know that that's necessarily what they say or what our state is saying,
yeah.
But he's wearing a mask, and that's why he's encouraging everyone else to wear a mask. And I do believe that the studies still show that it's not 100% clear that once you're vaccinated, you're fully protected, and for how long you're protected. Well, and we do have those, what do they call them, the breakthrough cases, right? Where people who were fully vaccinated have now been sick.
How about this, Governor? Why don't you just respect somebody's choice? If they don't want to get vaccinated, you don't have to try to shame them into saying that they're selfish or isn't there anybody you love. What about people that just don't want to get it? What about people that look at it and say, this MR new thing, which isn't even a vaccine, it's different than a vaccine. It's not a dead cell going in. It's a new type of technology. It's a new type of science. It hasn't been done, and we're now part of the testing. And maybe some people are like, you know what? I just don't trust it. I don't want to get it. I'll run the risk. Chances of me dying, 99.95% of me surviving, me get it, get over it, whatever, or I get this vaccine. What about some people that have a choice that they don't want to get the vaccine? Do you respect that,
Governor? He's not ordering it. He's not ordering
it. No, I know he can't order it. He can't. He could try, but why not respect somebody's choice?
Well, when you're in the middle of a public health crisis, at some point,
it's not a public health crisis.
It has been for the last year, John.
Tom,
yes.
He wanted to flatten the curve so that we didn't overrun the infrastructure of the hospitals.
Okay.
We didn't. We're not in the middle of a health crisis.
We have been
We've
in
lost
the middle
1% of, middle of the people that have gotten the thing, Tom. So don't call it a health crisis. Don't be part of the propaganda crap where the governor's sitting there with a mask
it's
on.
John, it's a global pandemic.
80% of the people die, Tom, are old or overweight.
It doesn't matter the number of people who die and their ages. The point is it's a global pandemic, so we're in the middle of a public health crisis, which was just preliminary for me to get to the point of what I wanted to say, which is that right now, because we're still in the tail end, I'm assuming, of this public health crisis, he is trying to get more and more people to make sure that they don't get caught unawares. And so he is just making sure that we walk the football from the 10-yard line into the end zone. Now, I do think that you do raise an interesting point. I thought it was interesting the way Hannah used the language. I don't know if it's her language or his language, that 28% of people over 65 have chosen not to get it. I don't know if that's the fact. It would be fascinating to know if those 28% are really resistant, or if they just haven't gotten around to it, or if they're just so far on the on the fringes of society that they haven't gotten around to it. That's that is the most disconcerting, because John, the chances of somebody over 65 who still gets it, they could have serious health consequences.
And so those are his words that they chose, and they were repeated over and over and over again. And it was that amounts to, by the way, like 330,000 people in the state.
Yeah. So what's interesting about that is that a choice? So let's say that we now everybody has gotten the vaccine, and there still are, let's say 28%, let's say 10%. I don't care what percent, but the percent of people that if we haven't gotten herd immunity that could suffer from it, will they be able to hold society hostage and make us all wear masks? I think at some point we're going to say, well, no, we've given you 2 years of warning. If you now get it, that's on you.
Yeah, and I don't know what will happen.
Is the governor pro-choice?
Yes.
If a woman would like to have an abortion, the governor is okay with that and supports it and supports Planned Parenthood.
He does support Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. So in that choice, here is a woman and she is pregnant for whatever the reason is, and she is going to end the pregnancy, which is ending a life. She's making that choice to end that life, and that's her choice. And that's, listen, it's legal, and there you go, and it's up to you. You want to do that, it's fine. I got no problem. He's okay with that. But somebody who determines, I don't want to get the vaccine, I don't want to do that. Chances of me dying, slim, very, very slim. Chances of me killing someone else, also very slim. But if I have a choice to end and have an abortion, I guarantee there's going to be a death there. And he's okay. He's all right with that, but not okay with somebody who chooses not to get the vaccine.
I have not presented the question to him in that way, nor have I heard anyone else do so.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He won't answer it. It just, this, Tom, you still believe we are in the middle of a health crisis. Do you really believe that?
I didn't say the middle. I say that we are in the midst. We're in the midst this last year plus, because now we're literally, I mean, I've been working from home for now over 12 months, that we are in the midst of a pandemic. We have to take certain kind of assumptions that are good for the social good. But I think we are tailing out. If it turns out that only 28% of the entire population of America or Washington State have gotten vaccinated, I think that probably gives us herd immunity, and that gets us in the clear. But until then, that's why he's being very kind of cautious. But I do think at some point it is going to be on the people that decide not to get vaccines, to get vaccinated, if they end up getting COVID. It's not on the rest of us to do that. The way I think the governor, and you're going to not like this, John. I mean, you're not going to like the governor. But I think the way the governor is trying to deal with that 28% of over 65-year-olds is the way we, as like kids of parents who are over 65, would want, Dad, Mom, come on, get it. Get it. That's what he wants to save their lives, and he thinks that's the best way, and ultimately he can't force it, just like you couldn't force your parent to do what you think is best for them. That's where I think he is.
And he was specific about the 65 and older crowd, because I asked. I said, well, if there's that percentage of people in that age group who are choosing not to get the vaccine, what are you going to do with this younger crowd that becomes eligible on April 15th? How many of them do you think might choose not to? And he didn't come out and say it didn't matter, but he said he was focused on the older group, basically.
It's less concerning because death is not... as high a risk for anybody in there.
And I've heard this week that hospitalizations are going up, John.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, we're nowhere near the capacity. But the interesting thing is that the governor also points out that look at all the Washingtonians we saved. How's he getting Washingtonians that we saved? Is he comparing our state to other states?
I believe so. He mentioned a second graph. Of the one, so the graph for the state all the way on the left, I did not see that graph, but we were presumably 7,000 to 15,000 more, or
7,000
saved more lives,
average,
fewer deaths, something per capita.
15,000 for the most.
Yes. Yeah.
So
take a look. I brought this up earlier, Hannah, before you came on early today, that I looked at Utah. I looked lockdown restrictions. They go all through all 50 states. I think we were like 45th or something like that. Most lockdown. I mean, then they do deaths, and then they do. So you look at the very top, least lockdown, and you see something like Utah. Utah's death was 2,000 deaths. We had 5,000 deaths. They were fourth on the lockdown. We were in the 45th of lockdown. So we locked down, destroyed lives, destroyed businesses, increased suicides, caused mental health for kids. We did all of this excessive death as well that goes with it. And we were more locked down and had more deaths than something like Utah.
More deaths because we have twice as many people as Utah.
Right. It's a population thing. Arizona was way worse.
Right. Okay, well, I believe
the similar population. I'm just saying.
Utah and Washington, very close as far as population is concerned. But that doesn't matter. Don't forget, we're in the midst of the pandemic. So everybody, even though you got your vaccine and science says you can't spread it, keep your mask on.
That's the message that they're putting out there. And again, the concern is the variants and the uptick in cases, and then it's spring and people want to go outside really bad because we know how bad they wanted to go outside last year when spring got here. Imagine how much they want to go outside this year.
But the CDC is saying it's highly unlikely that double vaccinated people are spreading it. That's
the transmission, which is different than getting it. Right? You can still get sick, but transmitting it is you giving it to someone else. Those are two different things.
No, getting sick is even less likely.
Oh, is that what they said?
If you're double vaccinated, there are very rare cases where you get it.
There's more than 2 dozen people in the state who got it that way, isn't there?
Okay, I'll let you guys... Tracy Taylor wants to call. All right, there we go. Bye, Hannah.
Bye, Hannah.
I love her.
Who doesn't? I know, right?
Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Come on in through the state roofing text line. It's a roof and it's the hole in it. They're fixing it, but before they fix it, you can get your text message in there. How about that? You text us at 98973. Come on in, one and all. Big words. Tom and I love the fact that occasionally people use big words. There's a fun article that says people got so sick of. And you see it more and more. They did an example of on the news. You hear different reporters using words that are completely unnecessary. They add extra words when you could choose this one instead of that one. It makes it sound better. I think it was, I forget the story about somebody using the word cash and cachet. Do you remember this? Do you know that reference, Tom?
No.
The reporter kept saying about a cachet of weapons, and then, and did it over and over again. Instead and then, like, I think after 3 days later, then they stopped and they went back to cache of weapons. I guess somebody had told them. But why use a big word when a smaller word will do?
Yeah.
Which you and I, when we were talking about this in the pre-show meeting, we immediately thought of William F. Buckley. For those that don't know William F. Buckley, a conservative that put conservatives on the map. In the 50s, 60s, he ran for mayor in 1968 in New York City. And he was always known for having an incredible vocabulary that left many people...
Any word that has been used had to be coined. I.e., there was a point at which it wasn't used. Now, when birth was given to it, birth was given to it because somebody felt a need for it. And that need, having been codified by the use of the word and its inclusion, presumably in some dictionary, to neglect that existence is to neglect the satisfaction that was to be had from the service performed.
So the word was born, the word needs to be used, and if the word is not used, then you're neglecting the fact that the word was born, where there was some reason for it. So he himself, as a father of huge words, you would, if you watched him on television, my dad was, there's a good one, write that one down.
I can just hear your dad.
Do you use the word in order to impress? Because there's no other word that could possibly be used. Does it actually communicate anything other than the fact that you are very smart?
Yes. And I think the answer is all of those. Not at the same time, but they can, a word choice can reflect all sorts of things. Now, in defense of big words, because I've been accused of, the great thing about the medium of radio is it's really hard to use big words, because if it's not part of your regular vocabulary, you're not going to end up using them. It's when you're writing things that you can really come up with these 50-cent words if you want. But when you're talking, you just talk, and it's whatever naturally comes out of your mouth. Sometimes I use a word that people think is an unnecessarily, you know, is a 50-cent word, but at least it's part of my natural vocabulary. I'm not aware of it as standing out. But in defense, here's my, in defense of people that use words that you don't understand, like William F. Buckley. I mean, I couldn't stand his politics, but I absolutely loved the guy because he was so erudite, so smart. And the fact that he would, it was like name dropping, except he was word dropping the entire time, and I was fascinated by that. But I would argue in defense of what he did is that he thinks the word that he's using is not a lazy word, it's not a show-off word, it's a word that's more precise, that he is trying to get across a point that maybe a simpler word could do most of the, you know, the heavy lifting, but it's, if it's not quite as precise as the word that that William F. Buckley knows and none of us do, then why do we deprive him of the chance of using a word that is perfectly apt for the occasion, because not enough of us know it? So that is, and he ran, and he's very, I mean, he founded National Review Magazine. He did Firing Line, which is a very intellectual kind of show. He was an elitist, and he was an intellectual, and he was all those things. So that was the world in which he lived. The flip side of that, though, and then I'll let you, sorry, I don't mean to talk too much, but the flip side of this is the other dictum. Yes, I'm very loquacious. The flip side of this is that you should know your audience. If you are talking to fourth graders the same way you're talking to grad students, there's probably something wrong about your delivery. That it's not the precision that the William F. Buckley is after would be a precision that's probably lost on fourth graders. And so I think you need to know what your happy medium is. His medium was, I'm talking to the smartest people in the room, or the people that think they're the smartest people in the room, so I'm going to challenge them with precision. But he would, I don't think he would talk that way to, of course he might have, I was thinking to his kids, like if he had a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old, would he be as erudite in his, you know, delivery? I don't know. What do you think, John?
Here's a word that he used once, and it was so funny. He's talking to these people, and he's tilted way over. If you ever watch him on the YouTube thing,
yes,
he's tilted way over to the right. He's just leaning almost out of the camera shot. He has a clipboard in his lap. He has a pen that he occasionally chews on. And he said this to this guy, and I see if I can get the word. And here's the word right here. Hang on. Here we go.
Pleonasm.
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 Pleonasm is the word.
Pleonasm.
Do you think at this point that you're being pleonastic? And I could tell that the guy, because he's asking a straight question, do you think at this point you're being too pleonastic?
Yeah.
I'm sure the guy was thinking, okay, I got a yes or a no on this. I can go either way. I have no idea where that. And you don't want to go, I'm sorry, what does that mean? You know, you...
In what sense of the word do you mean pleonism?
Right, yes, yes, you tried. And what origin, and could you actually use a different word other than that word? And that word means the use of more words than are necessary to convey the meaning.
Perfect.
Seeing with one's eyes, either as a fault or a style for emphasis, pleonasm. And I remember when he said it to the guy, I thought the guy said, you know what, I'm going to eat. The guy said, no, no, absolutely not. And he goes, no, okay, well, for time's sake, I'm going to ask you not to be. I mean, the guy's thinking, I have no idea what I just denied being. So. Anyway.
This all comes out of Joseph Epstein article commentary in Wall Street Journal. 50 cent words are no bargain. He's against that. He doesn't think we should use 50-cent words. And yet at the very bottom, do you see what the name of his most recent book is? Gallimaufry, a collection of essays, reviews, and bits. And so I had to look up Gallimaufry, and it means a confused jumble or medley of things. So maybe he's mocking himself, or he succumbs to the lure, too. Yeah, pleonistic. Yes.
Tracy Taylor, in small words, go ahead. What's it look like out there?
In small words.
All right, here we go, Sean. Give me burn about five notes for me of the mailman, and we'll get right to it. Here we go.
Oh, that aroma is wonderful.
It isn't a wonderful aroma. There we go. Teeny Tiny Lady's got the letter of the day. We'll get to that first, but let's take care of all the rest, Tom. Here we go.
So we'll start off with Jay Inslee announcing that everybody is going to be eligible as of April 15th. Area code 253 writes in, April 15th, Vax Day equals Tax Day.
Oh, clever. Actually, they moved Tax Day to the 15th of May, I think, but don't take my word for it. 425, those older people are unvaccinated because you've made it so difficult to find. do not appreciate the implication.
Ah.
It's because we've chosen not to get it.
Oh, good. I'm wondering about that. Okay. Area code 360, Utah has half our population, and we're more clustered.
Yeah, we are clustered, aren't we? Thanks for clustering us like that, Jay. 206, I'm a Mormon. We don't drink. I imagine not being drunk really helps.
And Linda in Silverdale, the only way to get through Inslee's press conferences is to drink a shot every time he says, Washingtonians or Washington State. I was driving and lost count today. It makes my skin crawl.
She is obviously not a Mormon. 206, yes, John. Yes, John, the antagonist, Tom, the protagonist. And with the Greek chorus behind them, enter the governor. John, laughing, announces his disdain while pointing a long finger and declares the lacking wit. Tom withholds his disbelief and pleading to be understood. Whoops, break for traffic.
That's our show in a nutshell.
Laius, and the chorus back there, the Greek chorus comes on, yes.
Yep. Very good. Biden infrastructure, area code 206, says the $2 trillion is spread out over 10 years. It's not all at once like the COVID relief bill was. True.
Ah, 360, stop making Trump your excuse to rationalize all of Biden's bad decisions, Tom. all right. Didn't know you
were. I can defend Biden without even invoking Trump. Area code 425, come on, John. Mm-hmm. This country doesn't produce anything anymore. All we do is service things and sell things we don't make.
Okay, 206, they'll pass a $2 trillion infrastructure bill and manage not to build a single road or bridge.
And Nick from Orcas, 5% of the $2.5 trillion infrastructure bill goes towards roads and bridges. Joe is going to have to trim a lot of fat if he wants Republicans on board.
Look at Nick throwing the numbers around. 253, Tom, what happens to all the workers when the roads and bridges get fixed? Teeny?
Wow.
Teeny Tiny? Teeny, are you there?
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
I want to do the one about giving you $5 to urinate on your electric fence, John, but
I also love the world.
That's not what the letter of the day is. It comes from area code 253. I get the two of you confused. I forget if it's Tom or Curly or whoever the liberal is, you're dead wrong.
Oh, my.
And I can see why you get that's confusing, because I'm the liberal, but John's the one who's dead wrong. So
that's
confusing.
Right. How about that? Wow. That seems. Why does the guy do that? It's Mr. 253 on that one. That's That seems
that's all she wrote.
All right,
that's all she wrote, John.
That's all she wrote.
She left the gloom a hanging
like
my front
door. Me too. Another hour. Here we go.
One more.